Greetings, comrades, and welcome to the Eastern Border. I am I'm back in Riga right now because, well, we had to leave due to some interesting emails that we received, and got a call, and we were told to just get out of Dodge while we can, and we did. We're gonna go back though because, well, you can't keep me away from a war zone for long. After all, my job is to report on all the happenings here. But I'm safe. I'm safe now, and hi to all the new listeners who joined us after listening to our interview with Dan Carlin. And I'd like to apologize beforehand since, well, I got some criticisms about this episode, but I'm really sorry that it might not turn out as great as I had expected it to, but that day I was just spending my whole day up or running about, and then 4 hours with the presidents, and we started recording super late, so actually kind of, you know, it's not as good as I wanted it to be, but it's still much better than what was the worst case scenario, since, well, yeah, if I sound extra tired on that one, I hope I don't, then, well, that's because I was tired. But we have some interesting things to talk about on today's episode. For starters, yeah, it's funny because Igor Girkin, while I was away in Ukraine, managed to block off some things, you know, from my access. But I found him. I found him. Turns out that although he is personally banned from YouTube, he now operates on VKontakte. And I got him there. And we also have his Telegram channel. And it was interesting since yesterday when he was doing a live stream, which I watched, he managed to state that he has reports from the ground in Donbas that there's a massive mobilization there. Although Russia itself doesn't want to mobilize. Apparently, the people in Donbas are really, really worried that they might actually lose this war, and the population is being forced to take up arms. And Igor Girkin himself stated that apparently people who haven't held a gun in their arms for their whole lives are being mobilized, and that includes university teachers, IT guys, like everyone. So that happened a day ago when we got the reports, and today at 8 a.m., apparently, a massive battle for Donbas, it has finally begun. Which kind of makes sense, also, about why I was said to leave, since, well, basically, I was told I'm not safe. So we're going to talk about that battle and some other news. And to all of you new guys here, if you want to just follow through this war in its totality and what I've been doing, just go back to the episode War in Ukraine, episode 0, and start listening from there. The episodes are mostly short, and then we discuss things. And if you like those shows, you can then just listen to our historical episodes as well. But today, I suppose we have to talk about the reigniting of the conflict, as it was basically somewhat peaceful for the last week or so, kind of ish. There were just clashes and skirmishes, but it wasn't like neither side advanced that much. Now I have something different. More important thing, by the way, before we get to Donbas is the battleship Moskva. Apparently the same one that threatened the soldiers at Snake Island. And it was sunk by two Ukrainian Neptune missiles. Now it didn't happen as quickly as it could have because There's a radius in which Ukrainian missiles can shoot accurately, and the Russian side had apparently figured out that they have eliminated all of the anti-ship rockets that Ukrainians had, and they weren't prepared. So their big ship and this Moskva, this was the flagship of the whole Black Sea Fleet, and at some point in 2004, I remember Mr. Putin and at that point Ukrainian President Kuchma. Yeah, they met on the ship. The ship also guarded the Sochi Olympics, and you know, as it had not only military functions, but it was a very representational ship as well. So it's a big blow, and Russian media have already started yelling that this is some sort of evil and treachery and evil Ukrainians. The funniest part is that Mr. Peskov, the spokesperson of Kremlin, has actually stated that if Ukraine doesn't stop its aggressive things, they might actually declare war on Ukraine. And, you know, it's kind of interesting because there are two comments. That one, you can't have a mobilization without a war. And two, well, you can't actually surrender in a war if you don't have a war. So, hey, maybe that's a cop-out. At any rate, this Moskva ship, just so you understand a bit from the military part, it was built in the 70s, and it was built in, well, in what's today Ukraine. And it was intended to be a part of 10 ships, which were deemed aircraft carrier killers. These ships of this class are armed with a lot of anti-air missiles and systems, and a lot of anti-ship systems, since the Soviet Union really couldn't produce aircraft carriers. They only have this aircraft carrying cruiser, Admiral Kuznetsov, that's also nearly dead, but you know it could only carry a few airplanes, because the Soviets and after that Russians never focused on the aircraft carriers. So this was their kind of their counter. This is the biggest ship in the Black Sea Fleet, and it's a major win for Ukrainians. Now, as this ship entered the ranges of Ukrainian anti-ship missile systems, it got struck twice by two Neptune rockets, but apparently didn't sink instantly. It managed to scuffle its way to the port, but the damage was so extensive that at the end it did drown or submerge, or I don't know the precise military term for when a ship goes over. However, the Russian media has also obviously stated that, oh, it was just a... At the beginning, they stated that this was just a localized fire, that nothing important happened there. You know, the usual stuff. They tried to deny that any damage has been actually done by Ukrainians. But then they kind of figured out that, hey, if we keep telling people that it was just us and accidents that destroyed a ship, the people might start believing us, because no matter how you spin it, losing a major vessel like this one, it is a major blow to diplomacy and to reputation. So yeah, the most believable version is the one that Pentagon and after that Russian military analysts also confirmed, that the ship was struck by two missiles and then it kind of scuffled a bit, but in the end it also drowned. What's the important part is that Russian opposition media have now portrayed this in an interesting light, since this is a huge military catastrophe, and it's a very expensive ship. But previously, if you remember, when on the submarine Kursk in the year 2000, or thereabouts, 128 people died, then it was a massive tragedy and everyone spoke about this. But currently, Russian media are denying any losses, although we know that the crew of the ship was about 560 people, and out of whom 218 are confirmed safe. So we know that not everyone on the ship died, but I highly doubt that it's so safe and neat as everyone says. The casualties potentially could reach over 300 people on this ship, and according to reports that I've received, this includes the ship's captain. And right now, Shoigu and everyone is just trying to hide the losses and everything, and at the same time, Russian propagandists in the media just don't know what to think about this. Either way, this looks great. This looks great for Ukrainian troops and Ukrainian soldiers, and it's a success of theirs, and they're just using every means to fight this conflict. But hey, this is the first real thing that the Russians can't really hide. After all, that's the flagship. So, about the assault. Well, apparently, I'm waiting for some news to be updated. Info's coming in. But so far, we know that there's been a mass mobilization in Donbas, like I told you before. Apparently, there are some protests, too, and some people who have been forcibly mobilized over there have been brutally beaten up, which is pretty bad. Currently, what we have 100% reported with videos and that I can attest to is that a tank column that was moving out of Donetsk to assault the Ukrainian armed forces has been destroyed. Also, I have information about how exactly did the rockets actually hit that Moskva ship. This isn't taken in one take, just so you know. That's why it's a bit disheveled. But apparently, a Bayraktar drone had flown in that Moskva ships, Moscow, big ships, kind of radar zone, and had focused its radar and drawn attention away from the two missiles that ship just ignored. And today, again, we have confirmed news that there are battles happening in Donbas, and yeah, another Russian tank column has been destroyed because the morale of Russian armed forces, and in this case, it's not even just Russian forces, it is the so-called Donetsk and Lugansk People's Republics, which were created by, well, again, my good old source and friend and enemy and the person that I hate the most Igor Girkin, aka Strelkov, who used to lead these places and who has openly stated that without Russian weaponry and Russian mercenaries, nothing would happen there. So now they're literally recruiting the locals who, well, aren't the biggest fans of the whole thing to be basically cannon fodder over there. But, you know, approximately today, tomorrow, we will know more about this whole situation because, once again, I have to focus my show less on surrounding news but more on prime military strategy. At this point, from the 24th of February, by the way, according to United Nations, in this conflict, mind you, because now we're moving to other news of today, 2,072 civilians have died in this war, 2,818 have been wounded, and 169 kids have been killed, and those are just the official data without without any confirmation really about other losses. And Belgorod governor, once again, by the way, have stated that accordingly, Ukraine has shot at Belgorod city, and that there are some damage there, but we can't really confirm that. Russian ships in the Black Sea, apparently, have moved away from the coast of Ukraine on about 200 kilometers, which is around 160 miles. Which is just interesting, because now obviously Russians are extremely wary, so as to not lose more ships. The automobile concern Stellantis, because of the sanctions, has also closed down its factory in Kaluga, where Citroën, Opel, and Peugeot cars were being gathered. And this basically means that currently in Russia, only two working automobile factories have remained. One of them is VAZ, which have cut off their produce, and they're functioning by about 30% already, and the Chinese Haval, which are also kind of functioning there, but it's definitely going to be weird. And the Russian Federation banks have not yet returned to the active trading in foreign currencies because, you can apparently, if you're not a private person, but if you're a business in Russia, you can now buy dollars and euros, which is higher than the one that you can see if you Google it up, by about 30-35%. I can continue saying this because this is one of the criticisms that I get on my show, is that some people just Google up United States dollars to rubles and they see a course which is like 79 rubles per dollar and they think that's a real one. The problem is that you can't. You can't really because it's illegal, and even those who want to do that, they're being severely limited. So that's kind of interesting. Also, Yandex.ru, we're going to Russian Google analog, Google competitor that used to be pretty big. He has now, well, Yandex, if you Google anything in Yandex, Yandex now blocks all links to independent media in its search. So now if you Google something up about the war and disinformation in Russia, you can only get the state information because, yeah, they're trying to cut down on everything because apparently, according to Alexander Nevzorov, about 90% of Russians are not informed about this war, and they don't know what's happening there at all. So, hey, we live in some sort of an informational bubble thing, and I'm really happy that I have my own ways of getting sources and information, and I'll be informing you about how this war goes and operates. And yeah, what we also have been planned is that I had an interview planned, and this would have happened if it wasn't for the war, and we wouldn't go to Ukraine. And it's not going to be about war or anything like that. It's not going to be a military. See, I listened to a science show, and Science and Futurism, because I'm a huge sci-fi nerd, and there's this channel on YouTube and on Spotify and everywhere else, basically. It's also a podcast called Event Horizon, and it's made by John Michael Gaudier. And I'm a huge fan of his show because after all these days at war and everything, yeah, I have to fall asleep somehow. So then I listen about space exploration and the possibility of life on Europa. And, you know, astronomy is one of my hobbies. And one thing, though, is that I've lost my I lost my telescope while I was moving, which is really sad. I really wanted to take that one with me. But anyways, we had an interview planned because finally I managed to reach out to the person. I also listened to Isaac Arthur too. And we had an episode about the Soviet futurism. You know, how in the Soviet era people were looking at the future. What were our dreams, you know? Like how in the 1960s in the Soviet sci-fi and the media, people would look at the year 2000. Now we live in the year 2022. And how was this view of the socialist future, of the Soviet future, different from the West? And I'm recording that on the 25th or 26th of April. It's going to be a nice convo. It's I hope that you won't mind. That's why I'm warning you, because I need to take a break from all the war episodes a bit just to get my mental health back in order. So warning you about that. Maybe you like it. I hope you will. If not, if you just want to listen to the war news, I'll manage to pull in another news episode then. I just, you know, arrived at home and I'm figuring all this stuff out. And if please remember, happiness is mandatory, and I'm still a bit stunned because of everything, and it's hard not to hear the silence all the time. But yeah, please support our show if you can. If you're in Patreon, that'd be very nice. Patreon.com/TheEasternBorder. It's on our Twitter page on our webpage. There's this Patreon button that'll take you there. You can also just click on the donate button in TheEasternBorder.lv. And, of course, support Ukrainian charities. I recommend you Google up comebackalive.ua. Comeback Alive is the one that currently I'm endorsing, because I've spoken with these people, literally, and I know how they deal with your money. And I saw also how humanitarian aid gets delivered into Ukraine. I have a small video about that on Facebook. And, we'll get through this. Sorry that this was a bit delayed. I just wanted Dan Carlin's episode to sit on the feed a bit longer, but I hope you'll find it, and I hope that, you know, we get through all of this in one piece. До свидания, товарищ. And once again, happiness is mandatory.